If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here not with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee, but with a man who had a far more established Premier League career, a man who finds himself among the pantheon of East Anglian goalkeeping greats. He can count Norwich, Ipswich, Aston Villa, Millwall among a number of the clubs that he played for. Some more? We got some more?
Yeah, we got Coventry, we got Wolves, we got Bournemouth.
Brilliant. Okay. And post-playing career, he earned a name for himself as a very well-respected goalkeeper coach. Andy Marshall, welcome back to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you very much, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good. So I say welcome back because you were on our podcast a good 6 or 7 years ago when we were first starting out. I realised that on the journey up here.
Okay. Yeah. Been a long time, huh?
Very long time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Lots happened in that time. Moving clubs, going from Charlton through to Birmingham, through to Millwall, and most recently stepping away from the day-to-day rigours of professional football.
Just relax. I mean, we're in a lovely setting, by the way. I've come to your place, which is lovely. We're in the countryside. It's a beautiful place for a podcast.
Thank you very much. Yes. It's not too bad. You know, after all the years of running up and down the country, driving all over, traveling the world, it's nice to have a little bit of me time with my family and enjoy actually the countryside and actually enjoy life for what it really is.
Well, that is certainly for a greater story, I think. So we're going to revisit this at some point over the course of the next few months. Just get your story, the reasons why you've taken some time out, and cover, actually, because when we spoke to you the first time, it was primarily about your playing career and the fact that you crossed the divide from Norwich to Ipswich, all that sort of stuff. And you were not been the last. So obviously it was done this summer, wasn't it, recently, by the lad who moved from Norwich to Ipswich.
Yeah, by Nunes. That's correct.
That's it. Yes. But you always come into the conversation. Whenever that happens, it always comes back to Andy Marshall, I find.
Yeah. So, in 2001, I made the decisive choice to go from Norwich to Ipswich, local rivals. Ipswich at the time were offering me something Norwich couldn't offer me. It was Premier League football. It was European football. Financially, far better situation to personally place myself and my family in. And it was an opportunity to try and progress my career. Norwich had been languishing in the Championship for many years and finishing mid-table at best. And at that time, I couldn't see a way forward. I'd been at the club since the age of 10. And I made the move when I was 27. So I'd given the club a long time and the club had given me a lot back in return. But for me, it was literally trying to go to the next step. And it's not about outstaying your welcome at a football club, but sometimes you just need to make that move. And that's what I decided to do.
There was a lot of vitriol at the time, wasn't there? But it's fair to say now, so we're, so 2002, you say 2001?
2001.
Right, okay, crikey. So we're 24 years down the line. Do you feel like you are welcomed back to Norwich now if you were to be found in Carrow Road?
I've been back to Carrow Road many times, playing and coaching. And when I played, I received the wrath of the Norwich fans, let's put it that way. As a coach, they've definitely lighten their mood towards me, let's put it that way. And I've met many Norwich fans coaching when I've coached there, and when I've been around the city. And they've been great towards me. You know, there was a situation where 5-6 years ago, Norwich wanted to raise £300,000 for to create the Nest, which is a training centre in Norwich for the local community, and they decided to do a 25th anniversary, sorry, of the Inter Milan game versus Norwich. And as the pantomime villain, I went back there, which was the first time I properly went back there in the role of actually being there with Norwich. And I came on after 60 minutes and played, kept a clean sheet, 30 minutes, kept a clean sheet. And the fans gave me a load of a stick and then gave me a big round of applause at the end of the game. So it went some way to sort of mending and fixing a few bridges. But at the end of it, you know, there'll still be people that said, you've made that cross.
Okay, okay. Was that against Inter Milan? Okay.
That was against... So it was the original Norwich side against the original Inter Milan side from 25 years ago. And Inter, it's, you know, they have their team from that period where, and they travel the world. They go around playing games. And we put our team together from 25 years, when, you know, 25 years ago. And the night before, we all... had a meal, and the plan was we were all having a meal and we're going to go out, go to the local nightclub, have a load of drinks, and we'll just enjoy the next day. Honestly, Matt, they've turned up. They look like machines. Every one of them, like, ripped to shreds. And we're there going, oh. So there was literally everyone... I don't think anyone had a drink apart from Brian Gunn, who drunk the place dry. And I don't think he got into like something about 4 o'clock in the morning. So... the rest of us, Gunny was substituted very quickly, by the way, in the game. But the rest of us went to bed early. It was almost like you went back in like to match mode as a professional player. And you're literally there going, I've got to do this right. Like, there's going to be 26,000 people there. You can't like do this stupid. Can't be hanging. So we've all gone to bed early, got up, and we had the game. And I think we lost 2-1. I think we might have lost 1-0 or 2-1. I can't remember. But I kept a clean sheet.
Very good. Very good. And who was in goal for Inter Milan? Who was
oh, God. Off the top of my head, I forget. You should try and ask me this before.
Yeah.
I'd have to check. I can't remember who it was.
Okay, well, we are going to... It's not Zenga. No, it wasn't Zenga. Zenga wasn't around.
No, it wasn't Walter Zenga, I don't think. No.
Okay. Well, look, we are going to... This is a Between the Sticks. So as... mentioned on the podcast last week between Rich and I, there are going to be some new voices this season, of which you, Marshy, are one. So we're going to discuss all the goalkeeping action from the Premier League to League Two. You've done your studies, you've done all your analysis. So let's crack on, shall we?
Absolutely.
So, as per, we shall start in the Premier League and at Molineux, where it was Wolves 2, Burnley 3. Quite the contest here. Certainly a contest for Martin Dubravka. What a signing he's been for Burnley so far this season. 5 saves in this one. A massive one at the death from Santi Bueno just after they'd gone ahead. What a save this was.
Yeah, this is a fantastic save. The thing about it is you can see it. The Wolves players... all coming in, he's got his own defenders coming in against him, and the easiest thing is to make the movement too early, and he doesn't. He holds his ground, because if he doesn't hold his ground, there's every chance that's going to go straight in, or there's somebody's going to get a touch on it, and he's just got to hold his line really, really well, which is what he does. Makes a step, drives into the ball. There's all your plyometric work that the sports scientists will say what they're doing for him, but listen, that's a top, top save, and by the way, a very, very good signing, and big shoes to fill at Burnley from last season.
Yeah, massive shoes to fill. It's one of those, isn't it, that goes... We see so many goalkeeper signings, of which we'll get onto in a moment. But one of those that went slightly under the radar. They also brought in Max Weiss as well, didn't they, for about $4.5 million. They've got Vaslav Hladký there too. But Dubravka's come in, Premier League ready. It's just a solid signing for the level.
Yeah, I totally agree. When he was at Newcastle he was there for several years, wasn't he? And... you know, every time he was asked to go in, he done well. He more than showed that he's Premier League level. So, you know, considering what Burnley have had goalkeeper wise over the last few years, you know, the level that they put their bar at for me, this is a really, really strong signing.
The winner for Burnley scored by Lyle Foster. So this is one that I guess wouldn't normally be flagged, and maybe it doesn't need to be, but does Sam Johnston need to come?
It's a tough one, isn't it? It's a tough one. It's the old adage is always this: if you're not sure, stay away. Okay, so stay at home. So, do you need to come and get involved? The question mark will be asked, and I'm pretty sure the answer would be probably no, he doesn't need to come and get involved. He does, and then the result is obviously what the result is.
Mm. You just, I don't know whether you look at it and think it's, he's given Foster an easier, I mean, look, it's still a very good finish, but if he does stay, is the finish from Foster, does Foster have to take a touch? Does the defender come across? Is it a harder finish for Foster to execute?
And that's the point. If you're not sure that you can actually affect it by coming out, stay away, because then you put the pressure back on the centre forward or the midfielder or the defender, basically on the opposition. So does he need to come and get involved? He maybe makes the decision really easy.
Mm, okay. There was a save earlier in the game from Dubravka. It was an in-swinging cross from Rodrigo Gomez. So we saw a few of these with different outcomes. There was another one in the game at Old Trafford between Manchester United and Brighton. It ended 4-2 to United. Senna Lammens, the goalkeeper, making the save on this occasion. It was a big stop because the score was 2-0 at the time. I think this is an excellent save.
Yeah, I think on this one, I think there was a lot of raised eyebrows when Man United went and signed him, because you're looking at, it looks like they're going to go for Martinez, proven Premier League goalkeeper, World Cup winner, top player, was even pulled out of a game the night before, and it looked like that he was going to go to Man United. And this lad's come in, and in fairness, he looks the part. He looks solid. The games I've watched him in, he doesn't look out of his depth. It looks like they've fed him into the team in the right way. They didn't put him straight in. Everyone's going, he's got to go and play against Man City. I think it was on the Sunday, and they didn't. They didn't put him in. And they've given it a couple of games to go, okay, let's get you into the rhythm and the speed of Premier League training. And this kid's gone in and he's done fantastic. And this save, as you say, from the in-swinger, again, it's same as Dubravka, where he's got to hold his line. You can't go too early, because if you make that commitment too early, that's where the centre-forward gets a toe onto the ball. So you've got to be brave. And modern day being brave is holding your line, not coming out and hitting somebody and making contact. Modern day brave is about going, I've got to stand here, I've got to react to the situation, because if he does go too early and they get a toe on it, he looks silly. So for me, this is, I agree with you, this is a top save.
I loved his reaction here too, because in these situations, you're caught between the devil and the deep blue sea a bit, aren't you? Because on one hand, you look up and you want everybody to know that you've made the save, but then he's realised that the referee's not sure. So he's held his hands up. Danny Welbeck's running over going, he's definitely touched it, but he's holding his hands up. No, it didn't touch it. So, I mean, thankfully now with replays, he gets the credit and he's getting it right here. But at the time, a goal kick was given.
Do you know what, Matt? And you're absolutely right. And, you know, as goalkeepers, we want the praise, but equally, we don't want to give away unnecessary corners. I'll give you a little example. Many, many moons ago, I was playing for Norwich at Wolves, and our friend Matt Murray would have been in the other end. And Uriah Rennie was the referee. God rest his soul, he recently passed away. And Wolves have had a shot. I've dived and I've got the slightest of touches. Now, all the Wolves fans are like going mental behind the goal, and Uriah's got no idea. He couldn't see it. So he's come running up to me, quietly said, Marsh, did you touch it? And I've gone, yeah. So he gave a corner. Anyway, no word of a lie. Literally, as soon as the corner was kicked, gave a foul. Us a foul. It was almost like, you got, because he was getting dogs abuse, like, yeah, from the Wolves fans. And I had a really good relationship with Uriah Rennie. He was a fantastic referee. But yeah, it was just a funny incident where you want to take that bit of praise. And I thought, I can't do you here, Uriah. I've got to do the right thing, you know?
I thought you were going to say the corner's come in and they've nodded it in. They scored.
Then I wouldn't be happy.
Over to the Hill Dickinson Stadium, Everton 0, Tottenham 3. Guglielmo Vicario, so he followed up a brilliant performance in midweek against Monaco in the Champions League with arguably another MOM display here. He saved an overhead kick from Beto, great save that, and a really good save down low to his right through bodies from Illiman Ndiaye as well.
Yeah, the save down to his right, I think it's taken two deflections, one off an Everton player and one off a Tottenham player, and that is a top save. But for me, that's what Vicario is. Vicario is an unbelievable shot stopper, passes out well, plays with the ball well, struggles with crosses. But as you quite rightly mentioned, that save down to his right-hand side, that's top draw. That's top draw.
There's two corners here that we're going to talk about. One, well, both ended in goals. One was disallowed, one wasn't. Firstly, the disallowed equaliser for Everton. Fair to be awarded as a free... Well, it was classed as offside, wasn't it? That he was interfering with Vicario.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's the right decision. As I mentioned, whether this is a ball he could come for, but for me, this is a weakness for Vicario. And if you see over the couple of seasons that he's been in the Premier League, how every single Premier League team, when they go against Tottenham, they use the same tactics of just trying to block him, trying to get bodies around him. It's a weakness of his game. But obviously Tottenham see that the strengths that he brings with his kicking and with his shot stopping far outweigh it. For me, it's a big weakness of his game where teams really do try and exploit this. But it probably is a foul.
If you're his goalkeeper coach then, and listen, he's had two very good goalkeeper coaches in recent times, Rob Birch being one, Fabian Otter more recently. If you're going in there tomorrow, you become Tottenham Hotspur goalkeeper coach, what are you doing with Vicario on the training ground to try and improve him in these situations?
Yeah, so for me, I've had situations like this before, and every goalkeeper coach will have their way of working in every situation. For me, I'm overloading him. Two or three times a week, I'm purely overloading him with bodies, with the amount of high-pressure situations that you're putting him into. You're putting him into situations where you're putting him into false situations where you drag him out of a position that he would take, and then you try and overload the back stick position. You try and put situations in where, for me, Vicario gets trapped and pinned very easy. And we see it with, I know you're going to come to it in a minute, but with the Jordan Pickford one, where he gets pinned very early. And the reason why is they're taking up starting positions too close to the goal line too early. And if you allow that to happen, you allow bodies to come around you. So you have to start creating false situations in a training situation where you start them not a yard out, not a yard and a half, start them 4 yards out. And I know it seems false, but they get more comfortable about being further out. And when the ball's going to come in, obviously they've got to drop back into a more realistic position. I just feel that Vicario, for me, takes up these positions too early and allows the opposition to go, we're just going to pin you in here. Mm. Because any situation where somebody's too static too early, you allow the opposition then to control you.
A logistical question here then. If you are, because obviously you want to replicate as much as you can in training to what it would be like on a match day, an in-game scenario, are you setting up those drills as part of a training session with the entire squad, or are you bringing in bodies? Because obviously you need to replicate it, you need to have the bodies around him. So are you using the existing Spurs squad as it is, or are you bringing up lads from the youth team to do that in your own goalkeeping setup?
You're not going to get a situation where a manager is going to want that situation
exactly
to develop,
yeah,
and he's not going to do it. What you can do is you try and get as many of your goalkeepers through the academy system, through the reserves, 21s, first team, and then you try and create a false situation that way. Then, as you rightly say, potentially you would go and get the 18s, the under 18s, and use their bodies to do the overload. You have to create a situation where goalkeeping is really uncomfortable. When you're in this situation here where you've got potentially something that's one of your weak parts of your game, you've got to create a situation where it's so uncomfortable that you then become used to dealing with it. And then it's down to the coach to step in and put them bits right where they're not working at this moment in time.
Good stuff. Good insight. You mentioned Jordan Pickford there. The second goal for Spurs from Mickey van der Ven. It's actually a tale of three corners, because we're going to get on to Matt Sells in a moment. But the Jordan Pickford one here, what are you saying?
Yeah, a very similar situation. And Jordan's had an amazing career, and he's England international, England number one. And for me, again, he gets pinned too early, takes his starting position up. The quality of the delivery in the Premier League, we've got to understand, it's phenomenal. They're whipping balls in. They're not going much higher than 8-9 foot in the air, and they're coming in at real pace. But he's allowed the Tottenham players to dictate to him, which has then allowed him to be pinned in. Equally, the lad who's headed it in has got a free header. But for me, Jordan's got to come through and deal with the ball.
Bournemouth 2, Nottingham Forest 0. Now, this was not the first time we've seen a corner go straight in. It certainly won't be the last time. But what can Matt Sells do differently to avoid this going in?
Stop it. Okay, so I had a situation when we brought Lucas Jensen to Millwall start of last season, and literally the same goal happened, the exact same goal. And I'd had Lucas at that point for 4 to 6 weeks, and we'd done everything that I've just explained to you about doing the overload, about starting positions, about getting into line. We'd done all that, and we'd done it for months, because you might fix it short term. It's the long term issues that you're also looking at. So I've been in this situation as a coach where one of my goalies 18 months ago did exactly this against Watford in the opening game of the season, and in the game which we lost 4-2. And I just spent months doing exactly what I explained to you. And what's happened here is Sells has allowed the centre forward just to pin him, because he's gone and stood a yard off the line and he's just stood there. All of a sudden, the centre forward goes, I know what I've got to do. I've just got to either lean into you or step across your line. And then that forces Sells to have to come forward to the near post. And by doing that, with the pace on the ball and the way it's gone, has the delivery meant to go straight into the goal? I very much doubt it. But it's happened. But Sells is taking up that position too early. He's got to start further out. And as the ball is going to be kicked, then drop into the goal, he then controls the man that's around him. And then he can then move him if he needs to move him. Or it gives him the space that if he has to come through the ball or come to get the ball, he goes through the player.
Okay, at the opposite end in that game was Georgi Petrovic. So this is another goalkeeper signing, I'd say, this summer that went a bit under the radar. I think it was around 25 million, wasn't it? And I think that's partly because of the fact that Petrovic was on loan last season at Strasbourg, so not actually in the Premier League, so people weren't seeing him as much. But another one who's just seamlessly slotted into life at Bournemouth, and a really good save in the second half from Morgan Gibbs-White.
Yeah, and everything that you've said, though, is absolutely spot on. He's sort of just come in and no one's really mentioned him. And you know what? That's a good thing. Mm. If you're coming into a side that is doing unbelievable and the manager there has got them playing, it's incredible. You look where they are in the league. But when no one's saying anything about you, it means you're doing everything right. Yeah, everyone loves the plaudits. Of course we do. But when you get the plaudits, eventually you get the stuff that then comes behind it, because we all build everybody up to then knock them down. But he's just going, as you quite rightly mentioned, quietly under the radar. It's no surprise that they're doing so well when your goalkeeper's doing so well. So he's been a great signing. 25 million quid as well. Yeah. That's no mean feat. That's some serious amount of money.
Yeah, good goalkeeper. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the course of the next couple of years with him. And finally, Brentford 3, Liverpool 2. Just going to mention this because it's the first time we've seen a high-profile example. In fact, it's the first time I've actually seen it full stop, where a goalkeeper's been done by the 8-second rule. Now, I, as a very reasoned and balanced individual, I'm happy to admit that I overreacted when this rule was first mooted. I thought it would be a shambles. I thought it would be a circus with the referee holding his hands up. But I think it's excellent.
Yeah,
I was wrong. I think it's a really good rule, and it's really interesting to watch goalkeepers who, for a fleeting moment, when they either collect a cross or they come and smother and they stay on the floor, they suddenly realise after about 2 seconds, oh no, crap, I've got to get up because I've got to get rid of this ball. And I think it moves the game along quicker. I think it can bring excitement. In this instance, it absolutely could have done in injury time with Liverpool getting a corner. So, your take. What's your take on it?
My take on this is there used to be the 6-second rule in years ago, long time ago. So they got 2 more seconds. but the football is always looking a way of keeping the ball involved on the pitch for longer and keeping the game flowing as quickly as they can, as fast as they can, because that's just the way modern football is. I think it's a really good thing. I like it. I'm with you. Wasn't sure how it was all going to pan out. What was the rules going to be? Because you lay on the floor for 20 seconds. We didn't know how it was all going to go. And I think you're probably right. I think this is probably the first time I've seen it as well. And I remember watching the game, and you're there, and Kehler's, you know, obviously playing against his old team, and the big, big game for the lad, you know. And you're there going, what's the referee going to do here? But I remember him saying it on the commentary. He held on to it for 12 seconds. So it's not like 9 or 10. He'd held on for 12 seconds. So listen, the referee's done the right thing. No one can argue it. Would you like to have seen a goal come from it? No, personally, I wouldn't. But equally, what it's done is it's set a precedent now. And I'd be very surprised if there's many other goalies that get caught with that one. I don't think they will. But I think it's good for the game.
And just a word on Kelleher.
Yeah.
Quivin Kelleher. That was a goalkeeper that you had before he was at Liverpool.
Yeah, so I had him for a couple of seasons as a young lad, between 14 and 16. And even then, you could tell he was going to be top draw. He used to come over every couple of weeks, come and train with me. And you could see he was going to have a top career. Could you see he was going to get to the heights of being at Liverpool? Not sure, because when I was at Villa, I thought he could become Villa's number one. But he's had a great career, and he's had a long, may it continue for him. Now he's going to have a continued run in a team that he can keep playing and playing and playing in.
It is the EFL overview. So, starting in the Championship, of course, where there were many examples of goalkeepers, in fact, throughout the entire EFL, of goalkeepers making big saves and then seeing their side either equalise, take the lead, or extend the lead as a result. In the Championship, we'll start with Carl Rushworth, kept Coventry in front in the first half of their win over Watford. A series of saves in this one, notably a one-on-one from Rocco Varta, sticking out his left leg there. And Victor Johansson, up to his usual tricks. Again, a really good goalkeeper, Johansson. Point blank from Mackenzie Kirk. That was followed by a lovely throw to set up a counter-attack. 1 minute later, as I said just there, Stoke took the lead with the only goal of the game at Portsmouth.
Yeah, and we look at the Rushworth save. What I like about this, you know, Coventry had lots of possession in the game. And at one point, I think they were 3-0 up, weren't they? And they're looking like they're going to just run away with it. And then Watford go down to 10 men. And then all of a sudden, the second half changes. And you're like, God, what's going on here? But what I like about this, he's on his front foot. He's on his front foot, anticipating the through ball. And what he's not done, he's not just come and tried to make the block. He's come right down the line and thrown his body in front of the ball. And he's not just gone for the spread block, is what I meant, sorry. Because you see goalkeepers, they went for a period where they would get in that position, just make a spread, and they would just pass it past them. I like this. And the main bit I like about it, he's on his front foot. You're not going to beat him in this situation. It's brilliant. Going on to Victor, one of my old boys as well, Villa, believe it or not.
Oh, there you go, of course.
Yeah, he was one of my boys. Yeah, listen, he's potentially the best goalkeeper in the Championship. I think he's had a fantastic rise over the last 4 or 5 years, where his career took a little bit of a hit early doors. But this save, again, held his line, a bit like the Dubravka one, where he's just held his line, just stood there, let his reactions deal with it. And then, as you quite rightly say, the throw afterwards was fantastic.
Will he find his way back? Well, yeah, will he find his way into, I do say back into the Premier League, because it was in the Premier League when you were with Villa, right? Will he make his way back there and be a starting goalkeeper at some point? Can you see that happening?
He is all day got the temperament to be a Premier League goalkeeper. He will make the move at some point to the Premier League. And is he good enough to play in it? Yes, I believe he is. It's then just that opportunity, whether he'll actually be given it or not.
A couple more. Ivor Pandur with a great save early on from Tyrese Campbell in what ended up being a draw between Hull and Charlton. So this was a ball over the top. Campbell's on the angle, but looks for all the world that he's scored. Somehow Pandur has managed to connect. I think it was his upper arm, wasn't it, to see it off for a corner. And then Balazs Toth. I thought this was some lovely goalkeeping here, and a comeback for Blackburn at home to Southampton. So two really big one-on-one stops, both from Adam Armstrong. His decision making for me and his execution in closing the space, specifically on that first one, because Armstrong's tried to dink him. And actually, that's exactly what he tried to do at Bristol City in midweek. So two excellent stops here from Toth.
Yeah, I think if we go back to the Pandura one for Hull, what I like, again, I like about this, and you're going to see a little bit of a pattern here, Matt, with the Rushworth, Pandura and Toth. They're all on the front foot. They're all anticipating them deep balls from that position just inside the halfway line or around it, and them long balls across. They're on the front foot. Pandure on this one, as you quite rightly say, he works in line. He's not working behind the line. And what I mean by this is, as the ball's coming across the field and it's going across the 18-yard box, he's working in line with where the ball's going. He's not behind it. He's not in front of it. He's right in line with it. And so that enables him that he's got his body and the width of his arms that he's able then to deal and catch and save the ball. Anything beyond that, going to the near post, is probably going to go wide anyway. If it goes back across him, he might get beaten beyond his arm length. But anything around him, it gives himself a great opportunity of saving it. And I quite rightly agree with yourself. I think that's a top save. I think he saves it with part of his right arm. Great save. Going on to Toth at Blackburn. Again, if you look at it, again, similar situation to Pandure and very similar situation to Rushworth. Both times, holds his line on his front foot. When the centre forward takes the touch, he drives down the line. He doesn't come into that block position, which I'm not saying that it's not, there's not a place for block, but too many times it's not been trained or coached in the right manner. In this one, and then his save afterwards, which again is a very similar save, but from a crossfield pass, he's held his line on his front foot. As soon as that touch is taken, he's down the line. And he's down the line, and now all of a sudden the pressure's now on the centre forward. Great saves.
Why do you... I've heard this from a few goalkeeper coaches now. You've mentioned it a couple of times here, the one with Carl Rushworth and with Toth. That block shape where goalkeepers are just doing it for the sake of doing it. They're not analysing the distance between themselves and the player and the ball. They're effectively just making a generic shape. Why do you think that has come into the game?
I saw the block shape come into the game 15, 20 years ago. David De Gea was probably one of the big ones that you could say started using it. And what David did, his coach obviously taught him the correct distance to do it. You can't do it unless you're 3 yards away, okay, and closer. You go 5 yards, players are too good, they'll take a touch and knock it round you. Or they'll take your head off because they'll hit the ball so hard. So what you see is too many coaches trying to go, oh, we're going to do the David De Gea block, and not understanding the distances that are required. And that crept into the game for the last 15, 20 years for me. And I was seeing it time and time and time again, where goalies would literally go into that block shape, throw their arms out and go, oh, I got beat. That's as much as a mistake to me. That's just an easy way of just going, oh, it's not my fault. No. If the distance is right, yes, go into the block shape. Otherwise, you've got to either hold your line or you've got to get down the line of the ball to them.
Into League One. Killian Cahill, a first mention on the pod for him. Incredible reactions inside the opening few minutes at Brisbane Road. So Leyton Orient with a 1-0 victory over Lincoln, and Cahill touching onto the bar from Ben House and keeping his spot at the moment ahead of Loney Tommy Simpkin in the process. Sam Tickle, a really smart double stop at 1-1 in the game between Mansfield and Wigan. So the initial effort as Luke Goldwood's from a corner, a bit awkward to deal with. He's managed to get a hand on it, but straight into the path of Tyler Roberts. His attempt is then instinctively poured away by Tickle while still on the ground. Really good double save that. And finally, Brad Collins saving a penalty from Omar Bugeel in the 10th minute of Burton's visit to AFC Wimbledon. So the rebound here has hit the post, which you love to see. The danger was cleared. Burton won the game 1-0. Nice stop in injury time from Jake Greaves too.
Yeah, if we rewind it to Brisbane Road, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, Matt, but if you look at this, he's on his front foot. Okay, so as the ball gets clear to about 35 yards out, it's then headed on. 12 yards out, striker comes on, connects perfect with it. There's not much more the striker can really do. But what I like about this is the goalkeeper's held his line. He's on his front foot anticipating, can I get down the line? That's the one where we're saying about the block, where sometimes some goalies would have just come out maybe to 6 yards and made that block shape, and it would have gone over the head and in the goal. I can't stand it. It's not right. What's happened here is he's on his front foot, anticipating the ball coming through, can't come, holds his line, makes an absolute world-class save for me. Absolute fantastic. Going on to Sam Tickle, yeah. This is one of them saves where it's just all out, throw yourself and just try and do anything you can do. It's one of them where it's looping back over you. You don't really know what's behind you. So you've just got to do something. He's just thrown himself. And to me, that's what your training is all about, of making them instinctive reactions, of just working your feet and making a block or a save or whatever. And he's managed to do it. Great saves. And then we go on to the final one, the penalty. Yep. Like this one. Down to his right-hand side. Makes a strong save. Unable. He's almost dived past the ball. And I think this is what's killed him a little bit. He's earned his luck. And I like to see that when you get the penalty save right. But he's almost dived past the ball and then ended up, the only thing he can do is then stop it. And because he's gone past it, it then comes back into the middle of the goal. But he earns his bit of luck where, as you say, then the rebound hits the post.
Into League Two, where Will Stanway double stopped in Barrow's home draw to Barnet. So both Namdi Offerbore and Callum Stead denied, with Barrow equalising just a minute later. Yet another one of those. He made a couple of important stops late on as well from Mark Shelton and Danny Collinge. In a good frame of form at the moment, the former Chester man is playing well for Barrow ahead of Ben Winterbottom there. Jojo Wallacott back in the thick of it at Crawley. So he was frozen out at the start of the campaign. Harvey Davies came in on loan from Liverpool. He's now enjoying a fifth game on the spin with a first win and clean sheet. An excellent tip onto the bar from Shaq Ford in first half injury time against Bristol Rovers. It was goalless at the time. Crawley have then scored before the break. They've bagged another three to end the game 4-0 winners, and Wallacott making another decent stop at 3-0 in that one.
Yeah, I think if we go up to the Barrow game, I think if we look at this one, okay, as the ball shifted around the box and then the shots eventually been taken, it looks to me like one of the Barrow defenders literally tries to dive and clear it with his head. Maybe that puts the goalkeeper off. For me, it's a catchable strike. And that's the reason why he ends up getting away with it with the second save, which he deserves. Okay, so credit to him there. And I'm going to give him a bit of benefit of doubt. The sun looks like it could be blinding him right in his eyes. So as much as I'm going to criticise and say, I think you've got to hold the first one, I'm also going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, I think there's probably a big issue with the sun here, and you've earned your luck on the second save. We go on to the Crawley game, and Jojo, yeah, this is a great save by Jojo for me. Top draw, 12 yards on the angle, 12 yards out on the angle, coming down the right-hand side. Jojo, what I like about this, and when people watch this who are listening, he doesn't get drawn down the line. Okay, so from that distance, and you've got defenders which are keeping the centre forward away, as in he can't come right in at goal, he holds his line. So if you can look at it this way, if you think where the near post is and you think of where the middle of the 6 yard box is, and if you were to draw a line, his heels should be on that line. Okay, he gets a little bit further drawn, but what he's done is, by not getting drawn further down the line by a yard or two, he's now still got his reaction time. And by doing that, he's managed to make the save. I think that's a top save. I thought he got drawn a little bit low, but he's managed to get away with it because he's held his line and he can react. So for me, that's a top save. And as you quite rightly said, big thing about how the game then ended up. I like this one though, the final one, the penalty save. And I like this one. And I'll tell you why I like it. He's down to his right-hand side. It's very, very similar to the previous penalty. But this time, it's a little bit further. It's outstretched, but his clearance has gone outside the 18-yard box on the angle. So he's not only made the save, but he's given his whole team the opportunity of being able to actually defend the second phase. And that's brilliant.
So that's Matty Young there, the penalty save you mentioned of Salford from Bradley Dack at Gillingham. So they've done the same thing. They've extended their lead moments later. They won the game, Salford at Gillingham. But here's a stat for you.
Yep.
Okay. Of the 8 penalties that I counted up taken across the Premier League and the EFL this weekend, 1 was missed, hit the post, 3 were scored, but 4 were saved.
Yeah. So this is where I was going to come on to at the end of the penalties. And I think it's a really good stat that you raised. And I think the compliment goes to the goalkeeper for making the save. Compliment has to go to the goalkeeping coach and the analyst for the work that they do. And that's the quiet work behind the scenes that nobody recognises. And I'm not saying goalkeepers don't do their bit on it. I'm not saying that at all, because they've got to go out there and make the save. But when you have the team behind you that is doing that work, that are working out statistically, and they're looking at the tactics of how a centre-forward midfielder is taking a penalty, that information is being fed to the goalkeeper, and then he's using his best knowledge of what he thinks where it's going to go. I know when I was coaching, you know, I'd sit down with all my goalkeepers and I'd be telling them where the next penalty was going to go and who's going to be taking it. So the goalkeeping coaches and the analysts need a little bit of praise here on this one.
Can you remember many penalty stops in your career?
When I played?
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon I wasn't far off 50%.
Really?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, I was, and that was working it out yourself, not having coaches or analysts then. Yeah. My
50%?
Stat, yeah, it weren't bad. Yeah, as a coach over the last, I think maybe 2 or 3 years, I think we worked out the stat. It was close to 75%. Not save rate, but went to the place where we said the ball was going to go to.
Yeah.
And I think it was nearly 75%.
If I can hark your mind back even further, your first penalty stop, do you remember who that was against?
I remember the first one I conceded. And that was in my second ever game against Newcastle at Carrow Road. We won the game 2-1 and Raul Fox scored against me in the River End. We won the game 2-1 and I got man of the match.
Did you?
That's the only way this has scored past me.
He would have been an ex-teammate.
Yeah, he was an ex-teammate. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Foxy, yeah. So that was the second game that I made. I remember one in the cup against Bolton and we had a penalty shootout. And yes, I saved two in that game and then conceded two, I think. But we missed. Ridiculous.
Clean Sheet Club.
So it is time for Clean Sheet Club. It is your first appearance on the podcast. So I'm going to give you a reprieve here and I'm going to do Clean Sheet Club because Rich normally makes such a big fuss out of it and it's just a nonsense. So I'm going to do this one, but next time there's no escape, okay?
Okay.
In the Premier League, Georgi Petrovic, Serbian stopper, David Raya, 5 on the spin in all comps. Emi Martinez, tally doubled, Guglielmo Vicario, MOM. Into the Championship, Christian Walton, account open for 2025-26, Victor Johansson, 5 alive. Radek Vitek, 2 cleans and 3 wins on the spin. Jakob Zetterstrom, when Derby win, he cleans. Max Crocombe, unbeaten in the champ. Into League One, Brad Collins, 4-7 since signing for the Brewers. Cam Dawson, back-to-back, Killian Cahill, welcome to the club. Josh Cleely, clean with every win. And Will Norris, taking the mickey. And finally, in League Two, Joe Day, 3-4 after shipping 7-1. Jojo Wallacott, account open for 2025-26, Mark II. Jordan Wright, 2-3. Keller Roos, so is he. Connor Ripley, talented. And Matt Macy, tally doubled, Mark II. Enjoy that, mate.
Really enjoyed that. Brilliant. Really enjoyed it.
It's hard to deal with you chuckling away next to me. Would you like the table to see who's leading the Clean Sheet Club at
Absolutely.
The moment?
Absolutely.
So we have 4 players on 6 clean sheets already. So 50% for Carl Rushworth and Nathan Trott, both of those with 6 in 12. Josh Keighley, quite a surprise really, considering Luton's, or the narrative around Luton's start to this season, 6 in 13. And Matthew Hudson of Oldham, 6 in 14. So he's keeping good company there for the EFL returnees. Not newcomers, the returnees.
I think the thing on this, Matt, well, we always looked at it as when I played and when I coached of as a target, okay, you aim for 20 clean sheets. And that's where you set your goal, like you're aiming for 20 clean sheets. And if you can get around that, you know you've done your job. You know, as a football team, you're going to be pushing in the right direction. Whatever league you're in, you're going to be pushing in the right direction. So, you know, I think all these boys, you know, that are hitting 6 in 12, 13, 14, they're not going to be far off it if they keep going, what, you know, from what we're saying. The old adage was, as a centre forward, you've got to get 20 goals. Midfield, you've got to get 10. Defence, you've got to get 5. But for me, I always went down the adage of goalkeepers, you've got to get, we're aiming for 20 clean sheets a season. I fell short sometimes, but that's what I used to go for.
Well, mate, look, it's been an absolute delight having you on. Have you enjoyed it?
I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, thank you.
Good, good. Something slightly different, as I said to you, from what Richard Lee, who is excellent at what he does, but the fact that you are a goalkeeper coach or a former goalkeeper coach just brings something slightly different. I'm sure he'd be the first to admit that.
No, I've had a really good time. It's the analysing the games from the goalkeeping side is something I thoroughly enjoy doing. And for me, when I coach and the coaching years that I've done, for me, that was the best way that you can teach a goalkeeper, and particularly young goalkeepers, because visually, most people learn visually. And to be able to actually show them or actually see this on today and go through the goals and then be able to talk about it, I hope the listeners can, you know, relate to what I'm saying there, because for me, that's the best learning tool.
Good stuff, mate. Well, as I said at the top there, we will do another podcast with you further down the line, which just digs a little deeper into the past few years for yourself. But for now, Marshy, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!